This is Real Life with Lisa Jesswine on Empower Radio.
EmpowerRadio.com.
Here's your host, Lisa Jesswine.
Hey, everybody. So we have heard Oprah talk about the aha moment before, but I think someone who's kind of harnessed that is my guest today. It is Courtney Armstrong. She's a licensed professional counselor, and she is the author of the book, The Therapeutic Aha. How are you doing, Courtney?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
No problem. I want everyone to understand the extended title is The Therapeutic Aha, 10 Strategies for Getting Your Clients Unstuck. And what I want everybody to focus on, not so much is clients, but on the word unstuck, because everybody uses that. I'm feeling stuck right now. I don't know what to do next. So what does it mean to be stuck? And maybe give us an example of something like that.
Well, I've been a therapist for 20 years, and what most of the time people are telling me is that, Courtney, I know what I'm thinking or doing or feeling is irrational, but I can't stop doing it. And the reason that I wanted to write this book, and I really want to write it for everybody, not just therapists, is that as psychotherapists, we were taught to do cognitive behavioral therapy or analysis, where it just generated more insight, or identifying all your negative beliefs, or trying to reason with yourself. Well, that doesn't work, Lisa, because the part of our mind that controls our emotions and our automatic responses, the part of the brain, I mean, it's literally physiological. It's a separate part of the brain that doesn't speak in words, and it doesn't use verbal reasoning. It doesn't use analysis. It thinks like an animal. And or a small child. So it learns from experience, association, and repetition. So as more and more neuroscience has come out, it dawned on me one day when I realized what was working for my clients is it's that when I could create an experience for them that got them to feel completely differently about their situation, that would be the aha moment that would get everything to change. And often the patterns that they were frustrated with were things that they had learned from past experiences and past relationships, or things, you know, you got growing up in these, and we'll get into it probably later, these implicit beliefs, or I call them embodied beliefs that we don't realize we have, but that they're kind of driving everything that we do. And you can't reason your way out of those. What we got to do is create a new experience. And there's lots of fun ways you can do that for yourself to get things to shift.
So is it kind of like retraining that part of our brain that says, okay,
yes,
I normally experience it this way, and it's always been that way. So
yes,
Now I got to create something completely different so that I don't think in the old way.
Yeah, but it actually doesn't have to be that hard.
Okay.
Because that part of our brain actually learns really, really fast. You just have to know how to speak in a language it understands. So you can use music, you can use imagery, you can use play and humor and movement. There's a lot of different simple things that you can do to shift an emotional state or shift a belief that you've had, or even to shift anxiety, trauma, and some heavier things.
Okay, can you give me an example? Because everyone might say, well, that's well and good, but give me an example of when someone's dealt with some really heavy trauma and mm-hmm. how that has helped shift them.
Well, one of my favorite examples is a client of mine who had these digestive problems. So she was diagnosed psychosomatic because the doctors could not find any medical reason that would explain why she was having difficulty swallowing. So she said it felt like her throat was closing up, and then it was hard to get it like past her diaphragmatic area, and then she'd have irritable bowel symptoms too. I mean, she felt like a freak. I mean, she hated it, and mm-hmm. she was a really smart person and really insightful, and she did, her doctor sent her to a psychologist, and the psychologist said, you know, this is psychosomatic, and I think you're anorexic. And she said, no, I'm not, because I want to eat, and I hate being so weak and skinny. But she was about 5'4 in height, and she had gotten down to about 88 pounds, so they were quite worried about her. And then the psychologist worked and worked and worked with her, trying to get her to expose her. You know, you just have to force yourself to eat and teach your body and brain that you can't eat this, that it's okay to eat. And we call that exposure. And she was still having all the symptoms, and she just felt weak and even more frustrated with herself. So then he sent her to me because he said, you know, I don't know what else to do. Maybe there's some trauma in your past that you know, you're just not conscious of or something. And I know someone who specializes in working with trauma. And I also do hypnosis. So, and he said, well, maybe you can just hypnotize her to be able to eat, you know. Well, yeah. The way hypnosis works is all hypnosis is speaking in a way that emotional part of your brain understands. Again, it learns through an experience. So when she came to me, Lisa, and I'll tell your audience members how it describes how to do this in the book. I said, you know, if you asked her directly, what do you think caused that? Or what do you think from your past may have contributed to that? I mean, she had given it a lot of thought. She couldn't come up with anything that really rang true for her. And I said, well, let's do this, because the emotional brain speaks through the body, not through words in your mind. Just follow that feeling back to the first time you can remember having that same feeling. And she was in her 20s, but at this time, but she went back to her adolescence, and her eyes got really big. And she said, oh my gosh, it was at my family's dinner table. And the first time it happened, there was this horrible argument where there was just a lot of tension in the family, and we knew something was going on between my parents, me and my brother, but we really didn't know what it was. Mm-hmm. And to break the tension, my brother started picking on me, and then I fought back, and then it seemed like everybody got mad at me and blamed me. And she started having digestive problems just eating at the dinner table. And then to make a long story short, what had happened was that her father was having an affair, and the mom had just found out about it. And instead of, you know, they weren't ready to tell the kids, but what my client at that time got the impression that she was somehow causing the problems in the family.
Wow.
Her brother, you know, was picking up on the tension and convinced her, like, it's your fault. You know, you're so, but she had some other school some learning issues going on and some things at that time that he was just saying, you know, you're causing all the stress on the family. And so when she started having these symptoms again in her 20s, what was going on is she was in a marriage that wasn't going well, and her in-laws were blaming her for all the family problems.
Yeah.
So she's having that again. So when we got in touch with that, she began to eat. I mean, all we had to do was kind of bring that to her awareness. And then I used an imagery exercise with her where I said, we can't just pull up the memory. Now we've got to show your mom what we want it to do instead. And so we did some stuff with imagery where we helped her kind of go back into that scene and tell her younger self, hey, this wasn't about you. You know, it was about, even though she knew it intellectually, on an emotional level, imagery will help get that in a different way, so that deeper part of your mind gets it. Mm-hmm. And then I had her come up with a symbol that would represent the way we wanted her mind to be working and we wanted her body to be working. And I just described, you know, it sounded like you want things to just flow easily. You know, I have some ways I'll kind of work with the client. We describe what's desired, and then I ask them to get a symbol. And your mind will always pick the perfect symbol, and hers was a waterfall. And just visualizing that waterfall, and not long, just for a few minutes a day, and just kind of reinforcing that, got things working again. And mm-hmm. she began to eat, and within a 2 or 3 months, she was back to a normal weight. She still maintained that because she keeps in touch with me. And there were some other things, you know, just to get it cleared around the current marriage and stuff. But, I mean, it just cleared up a lot of things. So that's what I find. There's something back there that you're not even connecting with a current situation. And your mind got that pattern. Usually it was adapted at that time, because at that time, with her having all those issues, it actually delayed the divorce, and it kept her dad around a little while. I mean, there were some other things that she didn't consciously do on purpose, but it kind of helped the family you know, pull together and rally right. for a little while longer.
Well, and that's why you talk about harnessing the emotional brain and sort of repatterning that routine that it has.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm wondering as a therapist, too, do you run into people that actually, now this is going to sound weird because it's not really what they enjoy, but enjoy being stuck or receive some kind of payoff, like for being stuck in their, you know, like, okay, well, if I'm this, I can get attention or... you know, talk to a little bit about that.
Definitely that happens. But I think what happens, I don't think it's always fully conscious.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think people do it on purpose so much. So on the outside, you might say, well, we know why she does that. She's just got to have constant attention. I mean, that's what this client's family thought. Oh, she always gets these digestive issues so she can get all the attention, you know, or it's her way of getting, you know, love and comfort. Well, it was, but she wanted to do it a different way. She just, so a lot of times your mind, you might get what you want, you know, out of a certain pattern. It's not necessarily that you want to get it that way, but it's just something that the emotional brain learns and it keeps repeating it because it seemed to work. Even for addiction, you know, you know, well, this isn't a good idea long term, but the emotional brain thinks very short term. So all it thinks, all it does is associate, so like let's say drinking, it'll just associate it with feeling better. So one of the things that I like to reassure my clients is people will make, you know, eating disorders, drinking seem really complicated and why are you sabotaging yourself? And I honestly, Lisa, I think it's a little more simple than that. I think it's just the emotional brain associated a certain pattern with, this helps me feel better. And whenever you feel bad or uncomfortable, that's what the emotional brain drives you to do. Go get that thing. That made me feel better last time.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't think about long-term consequences because it thinks like a child. It's just like in the moment.
You know? Yeah. So dealing with all of the clients that you've had, is that when you sort of said, hey, I need to write a book about all of this because you started seeing these aha moments happening in front of you?
Yes. It was so exciting because when I realized I was looking at what do the sessions have in common that where people really make a significant shift and get better rapidly. What is going on in those sessions? And then I've read a lot, too, trying to figure out what is it. And that's what it began to become clear and clear that it's when I could help them kind of trace that back to an earlier pattern, and help them see it was adaptive, that they're not bad people. And then once we could bring that to light, then we would, here's the big difference in how I work with people and how traditional therapy has been working with people. It's about focusing on what's desired and being uplifting. You know, it's not about going, let's go deeper into the pain and tell me more about your parents' divorce and how awful that was. That's not what we did. We got it very matter of fact, like, okay, well, that makes sense why your mind kept thinking that would work. But now let's update it. I like to joke with my clients and say it's like an app got downloaded in your brain in 1972 and we want to update it for 2015, you know?
Yeah.
It's just that part of the mind hasn't gotten fully updated and connected with what you know intellectually. And to do that, we need to create an experience here in the session that helps to get that new learning. So another client you'd asked about, like, where there was a payoff, she struggled a lot with depression, and she did have a very abusive childhood, and not sexually abusive, but physical, emotional. And she was able to forgive her dad. And well, let's say this way, I don't always want clients to think the only way to get past it is to forgive. It's more about getting an understanding of like, okay, this is probably why they did it, they did, and it really didn't have anything to do with me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Information is power.
exactly. Information is power. And Well, her father did acknowledge and apologize to her on his deathbed. So she was able to get past when we reprocessed some of the traumatic memories from that experience. But her mom is still alive and refused to acknowledge that she'd ever done anything harmful. And so my client realized one day that the reason she, because I said, let's look at the advantages of not moving forward. She's like, I don't know. I just don't feel motivated. And she realized it's because if I move forward, my mom has always taken credit for any of our successes. And so if I'm depressed, stuck, it's a way of punishing my mom. I mean, but she wasn't fully conscious of that, you know. But when she got that realization, and I helped her not feel embarrassed about it, it's just like, you know, that's just how that deeper part of our mind works. Yeah. It takes things literally. Then we could work around that and give her, you know, help her find some ways to move forward and not give her power to her mom like that, you know? And, so part of it was like, well, what we need to show your mind is that thinking about it like that, you're still letting her control you, you know, and yeah. We've got to help you move forward, realizing you're free of that now. And, without getting into all the details.
No. That's fine.
Just to give you a sense. And I also did a lot with that client with imagery, but also music really helped her.
What kind of music?
It's better if you find what works for you. So one thing I talk about in my book is I do, I like to create playlists with my clients, but the clients have to pick their music. But what you can do, like this client found helpful, to motivate herself, because that's what she struggled with the most in her depression, mm-hmm. You start with music, like you create a playlist and you could start with a song or two that kind of reflects your current mood. Because if you feel depressed or bummed out or angry, and then you put on, you know, Pharrell's Happy, at that point,
he might punch the radio or something.
Yeah, exactly. So you have to start kind of at something that's kind of matching your current mood. And when what neuroscience has found is that even sad music helps us feel better, because it's like, even though we don't know the singer, just hearing someone else articulate what we're feeling helps us feel less alone, and it'll actually release some feel-good chemicals in your brain. So we start with that, but then we gradually add songs that help move her to what she wanted to feel. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't like she wanted to move from really feeling sad and empty to like it euphoric. It was just, you know, we try to keep it real and just kind of gradually make her to a state where she could feel hopeful and like it would be worthwhile to, you know, take action on something she had been avoiding. So that's because our emotional brain responds to music. So when I talk about experiences, that's really what I want your audience, you know, that there's things that are accessible to you right now. And the key is to figure out what resonates with you and to be thinking about what do I want to have happen instead of what's been happening. And how can I create that?
One of the things I love, it's a very proactive, interactive experience. You can't just go in and sit down with the therapist or sit down with a book and not do any work. Some of it you are going to be doing work. This is part of why you have either picked up that book or gone to see that therapist.
Yeah.
Be involved with your own ability to heal and move forward. So I'm a big fan of that. And I love the fact that you use everything from imagery to music to movement to, you know, even this whole superhero, crafting a superhero story that you use. And I want to tease people with that, okay? I'm not going to necessarily tell you about that because I want you to go out and get Courtney's book, okay? The Therapeutic Aha. And what's the best way for them to go ahead and get a hold of your book?
They can go to Amazon.com or Barnes & Noble or iBooks. It's available at all of those. My publisher is W.W. Norton, so of course you can go directly to their site as well. You can get an ebook or the hardcover. happy.
Yeah. See, when I saw that you use all these different methods, I was like, you know what? Where were you when I was going and through therapy? I needed you, woman.
Well, that's part of why I want to get, and that's part of how the book came out and why it's targeted to therapists, is because I was so excited about sharing this with other therapists so that they could be more effective in their work. And then through doing some trainings for therapists, a publisher saw me speak and called me and said, we want you to write a book about this. But that publisher targets therapists. So that's part of why it's targeted. But I really wrote it in a way where anyone can use these tools. And if you're in therapy, you know, you can share them with your therapist and say, hey, this seems like it might work with me. And can we do some together, you know?
Be proactive.
Yes, exactly. And clients don't feel comfortable. So let me tell you, as a therapist, I so count on your feedback, you know, because everything I say isn't going to resonate. And so what I look for a lot is I ask a lot, what's resonating with you? Tell me if, hey, Courtney, that doesn't motivate me, but that appealed to me. It's a collaborative process.
Mm-hmm. And you can find out also about, you know, any workshops or anything else that you have at CourtneyArmstrong.net. And we will have this link up on our page there on Empower Radio. Yeah. So make sure you check that out. But this is a really accessible type of book for anyone to read, to sort of, if you're curious about like what kind of therapies might work for you, this might give you a start to sort of read into this, you know, because I don't think therapy has as much stigma as it used to have years ago. Anybody you run into now, they're like, I've done that. But Courtney, we have come to that magical time in the show that we call the RL3, three silly, goofy questions. And we'd like to know, are you ready, Courtney?
I am ready.
Okay. Here is the first one. Not many people know that I actually have a fear of blank.
Oh, well, they might know now because I wrote a blog on it, but cockroaches.
Cockroaches?
Yes.
Really? Ew! Yeah, that's...
I know. I mean, I know a lot of people are grossed out, but like, I actually... I mean, I've worked on it now, but I actually, if I see one, I mean, I will run to the other side of the room or something. You know, it comes from living in New Orleans, and we have these huge, gigantic ones. Yeah.
Yeah. So let's see, Courtney, what song should we put on to help you with this, with your fear of cockroaches? I don't know about that. Okay. So here is your second question. Really think about this one, because this is wide open here. You get a walk-on role in a movie where you have a kissing scene with a celebrity of your choice. Who is it and why?
Wow, let's see. Okay. The first person that came to mind is Brad Pitt, but that seems just a little too common. I would like to think of somebody a little more obscure. So let me see. I'll say Gabriel Byrne, because he's a little mysterious and
nice.
I guess he played a therapist in treatment, but that's not why.
You figure you'll have something to talk about in between making out or something? I don't know.
Yeah, right.
I love it. Good choice. All right, and here's your third and final question, and this is where we get to find out your fantasy name, and this is going to be the name of the first pet you ever had put together with the street you grew up on. What is your fantasy name?
Okay, the first what? The first pet I ever had with the street that I grew up on?
And, yep, so what is the name of the first pet?
Oh, it's Gretchen Harding.
Gretchen Harding sounds so normal, like nice girl next door type of thing.
I know.
So, Courtney,
that is not Tanya Harding.
Yes, thank goodness it is. It's not that. Gretchen Harding. We will take. That very quick on your feet there, Courtney. I appreciate that. So if you want to check out Courtney's book, of course, this is the Therapeutic Aha 10 Strategies for Getting Your Clients Unstuck. And you can go to CourtneyArmstrong.net. Don't forget her book is on Amazon. You can check her out on Facebook as well. And this might be just the thing that you need to start you moving forward a little bit out of maybe that one area of your life that you always seem to fall back into. This is a great way to start it. So Courtney, thank you so much for being with us. We really appreciate it.
Lisa, thank you so much. And thanks to all your listeners. I love your show.
Thanks so much. Bye, everyone.